Hello everybody in the room, and hello everybody out there. Got my little security blanket with me. And I gotta take this off. All right. Well, tonight is step four. And I've been thinking about step four for a week. And I've had some things tossed out to me to try and look at and listen to and try to help me to make some kind of a presentation here tonight. And actually, when I get too involved, I think I'd mentioned in the meeting or two prior that I'm not much of a reader. And when I get too involved listening to stuff, sometimes I get too confused. I tried listening to some CDs and stuff to refresh my mind, you know. I can't remember what I did this morning, let alone 40 years ago. So what happens is then I get to racing and I get busy, and I just didn't want to get up here tonight and start talking, saying stuff that I hadn't even thought of yet. So I'm still pretty nervous. It happens every time, and but that's the way it goes. We've been through 1, 2, and 3. 4 is the next step. 4 is the one where we really have to take a good hard look at ourselves. And I don't know about anybody else. I'm pretty sure most people coming in here didn't really think there was much wrong with themselves, other than they had a little bit of a drinking problem. You know, mine was pretty much that. There was nothing really wrong with me. But when you get into the fearless and searching moral inventory part, you got to dig a little deeper than just the booze. And that's kind of hard, especially when you're new. And it was for me, because you know, I came in not thinking there was much wrong with me. Everything was wrong with everybody else. My boss, you know, my wife, my friends, you know, they all had issues. I don't know. And it takes a little while for the spaghetti to clear up. And you start to realize that a lot of the stuff that's going on in your life is, oh my gosh, it's my fault. You know, a lot of it was stuff I brought on myself. So, you know, I don't know why I thought those people that loaned me money would ever want it back. You know, I don't know what I was thinking. I was pretty good at borrowing money and say, hey, when they call, I don't have it. What are you going to do about it? You know? So that's kind of the way I was living, you know. I was carefree, and I say that because I was married, had 3 children by the time I got here. I somehow I'd managed to get a home, and I owed a lot of people a lot of money. I had a job, I had a decent trade, and the thing about it was, when I would get in a jackpot, I could go out and make a quick couple $100 real quick. So it kind of just reinforced my I'm not a drunk mentality. But you know, that as you get sober, you realize that, you know, that's just the tip of the iceberg is the alcohol. There's so much more to fix, and that's what you find out in step 4. The lying, the cheating, the stealing, the resentment. We all come in here with some preconceived notions, instincts that everybody has, and that's for me, it's the part of your brain that tells you right from wrong. And I was pretty sure I knew right from wrong, but when you sit back and look at it, my behavior certainly wasn't right. A lot of the times it was wrong. And when I would get drunk and lose things like cars and stuff, I wasn't hurting anybody but myself. You know, I never gave it a thought to all the different people that I was affecting in my day-to-day living. So, especially, unfortunately, my wife and 3 kids. My children used to leave me notes on my dresser telling me not to drink today, Dad. So that's pretty powerful stuff when you think about it later on in life. You know, they were 6 and 7 years old at the time. So you don't think you're hurting anybody but yourself. That's a mistake too. So anyway, the searching fearless moral inventory. And what my sponsor did with me was he said, you know, you gotta sit down. And I didn't do it with him. He told me to just do it on my own when I felt like it. And make a couple of columns, you know, of the, I want to say, you know, pros and cons, but they were more like resentments and what they were and who they affected. And you start putting all that on a piece of paper, you know, pretty soon you're thinking, wow, this is this and this is that. And then the last column, he said, then your part of your last column's got to be, what's your part in all of that? You know, what were you doing that created a lot of that mess that you're talking about, or those resentments that you have? And it's a pretty eye-opening experience when you sit down and do it honestly and earnestly. If you don't, it's you're not going to do it. It's just like spitting in the wind. You're not going to get anywhere. So mine was about a legal tablet length. My sponsor, Ike, said he did his on a little sticky pad. But we've talked about that since. Anyway, so mine was fairly long. I thought it was fairly thorough. And it's tough. It's tough to admit to yourself and to another person that, you know, you're not the great guy you thought you were. And I mean, I struggled with that. And I, you know, when I look back, I can't help but the, you know, you hear the word term insanity tossed around in here. It's glaring, you know. I'm living in a house with grass knee deep, you know, old beater car that, you know, nobody wants to be seen in, roof blowing off the house. I think I'm a big deal, you know. There was a little bar up on Upper Peach Street, I don't know, some people might remember, called The Castaway. And it was always supposed to be kind of a classy place. And I just decided to roll in there one night. You know, I was a blue collar worker. I was a carpet installer, floor covering guy. And I'd go in there with jeans on and a raggy shirt. And I'm going to go in there some night. So after I'm doing all my starting drinking at my nice places, like the Pilot House and some of the Celebrity Bar, Mosley. I decided to go in there, and I went in there, and I ordered a drink, and it was a nice place, very nice place. I had a beer or two at the bar, and I left. And the next time I went in there, I don't know, it was a few days later, and as soon as I walked in the door, the bartender had my beer sitting on the counter waiting for me. Wow, I fell in love with that. Like, this guy knows I am somebody. I have arrived. You know, he knows who I am. He knows what I drink. He's got it right there. This was great. And that's kind of how I thought. You know, I was all of that. You know, but what I really was really not much of anything until I took this inventory of myself, decided to work on it. You got to do it. And then when you're all done writing all this stuff down, you take it to your sponsor. And you kind of go over it. And he can direct you with it. Now, I did that initially, probably. I think I was 2-3 years in the first time I did it. Which goes to show you, it took me a while to even think I had an issue. But I went down through it. We went through all the steps. And here I am 40 years later, but I got back. I've been back a while now. I left for a little while. I didn't drink. I rubbed elbows with AA for a couple of years with Tom Carley and Jerry Neville and a few people that are gone now, but I always stayed in touch. Went to lunch with these people, and you know, I talked to them regularly, so I was able to maintain my sobriety. But after a while, things started to happen, and you know, I think I mentioned last week about a coincidence where God puts people in your path. Well, they put Ike and Mary Ann in my wife's path, and my wife came home and told me she ran into them, and I hadn't seen them in years. so they ask about me, and all of a sudden I'm back. And I'm going to lots of meetings and stuff. And now I just lost my train of thought. I'm getting old. Anyway, so, oh, that's where I was going. The Ike and Marianne got back into my life, and AA got back into my life, and the meetings and the people. And something was wrong or something, but Ike said something to Marianne, I believe. And Marianne mentioned it to me that, so I think she just asked innocently, "Has Ike talked to you about doing the steps again?" And my first thought was, uh-oh. He knows something. He's seen something in me that I don't know I'm doing. You know? So, anyway, I went and talked to him about it, and he said, "You know, Tom, probably been a while." And I said, "Yeah, it has." So we did them again. Ike and I did them again here a couple of years back now, but it was good for me. And Ike would say it was good for him to go over them again too, just like doing this is good for me. Even though Kevin will tell you I resisted for quite a while. So anyway, I don't know what more to tell you other than step four, you got to take the wall down, take a good hard look at yourself, and I mean everything, you know, financially. They talk about sexually, financially, business-wise, you know, relationship-wise, friends and stuff. And I was always taught, a long time ago, I was taught, you know, a lot of people have a lot of good points, but if you put it on a meter, and you know, you got a good point, and you get it right about here, that's pretty nice. You know? You start taking that good point and putting it way up here, it becomes a bad point. You know, you can become obnoxious with how smart you are, you know, and you can become pretty annoying if you think you're everything that everybody wanted in life. You know, you think you're God's gift. Eventually, that pretty soon you've turned away everybody you're trying to impress and show that you're all right. You know, I didn't have to show anybody I was all right until I got sober. That's when I started showing people I'm okay. And I used to tell people, I've spent a lot of money that I didn't have trying to impress people that I didn't like. You know? What kind of life is that? But that's what I would do. You know, I would try to win you over with bullshit, apparently, pardon my language. But I was a game player, and until you sit down and try to fix it and work on it, you're going to keep doing it. You know, I don't know. It just takes a while to get it straightened out. And that's how you do it. You sit down, you write it out, you go over it with your sponsor, and they'll direct you as to if you're doing it right, wrong, or indifferent. But and then you go from there, which would be step five. Turn your life, or say to your, I should know this by heart. Admit to God, ourself, and another human being the exact nature of our wrong. And there's a lot of things people do that get in here. And I heard a guy one time at a conference, this really struck me. It's funny, but it struck me too, because I can understand people wanting to withhold stuff, you know. And this guy said at a conference, unless you've been in a rocket ship with a chicken and a laser, it's been done already. I said, that's pretty important stuff, because that means it's been done. You know, none of us in here have done anything that hasn't been done already. So keep that in mind when you start taking your fourth step, and life gets better. So I think that's about all I got on four. Good enough.
Perfect. Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome.
So that brings us to the question and answer portion of our program. We've got a question here in the room. We'll go ahead and get started here.
Hello, everyone. I'm Donnie. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Donnie.
Thank you for sharing tonight. My question is, as you were writing your fourth step, how did you deal, cope, manage with those emotions that were stewed up, those feelings, the negativity, you know, up until you did the fifth step? I mean, I know how I've done them, but I always like to hear what how other people felt during that time between those steps where you actually, like, get, you know, to sit back and give it to your higher power.
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, it was on the fourth step. It was primarily the last column, which made me look at what my part in the whole thing was. And I'm sure there were some things that I just felt really weren't my fault. But, okay, you know, I'll take a little bit of the blame for it at first. But then, you know, the more I would delve into it and try to live it, the more I realized, yeah, you know, that was my issue, my problem. And it's as a... this is a daily thing for me. You know, we talk about step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, all the way through. But when you're here, and you're here for a while, you're doing them every day. Whether you realize it or not, you're working the steps every day. And so that's why it's kind of hard to explain how it works. For me, anyway. I hope that helped you.
Thank you. Another question in the room here.
Hi, Jim, alcoholic.
Hey, Jim.
So, Tom, let's say you're working with a guy, and you're at step 4. And he says, you know, I really don't have any resentments. You know, maybe he's older. All that stuff that happened before, you know, it doesn't bother me anymore. How would you respond to that?
I think kind of the way Ike responded to me this last time. He says, you're full of shit. Because I kind of thought, you know, hey, Ike, you know, I've been sober a long time. I don't really have a lot of resentments. And he'd throw a few things out, and I do. You know, so you can be sober 41 years, and I've got some resentments right now, you know, that I work on every day, and I kind of let them go. But I think you learn more in time how to cope with it. But if I was working with someone, I would just take that and say, okay, you know, so life is really good. You know, I don't know if I'm as bold as Ike. But, you know, I might be there someday, depending on the person. If I knew they were flat out lying to me, I'd probably tell them.
Hey, Tom, I'm Dane Alcoholic. Thanks a lot for sharing with us. It was insightful. And thank God none of us are as bold as Ike. But the question I have is, I've done the steps 3 or 4 times, and as recently as last summer I went through the steps. And how did it affect you when you did it again with Ike? Was there stuff brought up that you had totally forgotten before?
Yeah, I would have to say that. That's true. I think it not so much the amends stuff or the things that are wrong with me or were wrong with me. It was more eye-opening as far as a higher power type connections and seeing that there is a spiritual side to things. And you know, I'm still a little gun shy with the word God and stuff. I don't know why, but I know darn well that He's out there. Something's out there that picked us all to get in here and get straight now, you know. But that came more to be a presence in my mind when Ike and I did them again the last time. And, you know, we even prayed together. I'd never done that with anybody because that was, you know, that's not manly. I don't know what I was thinking. We did it, and it was good. It was a good thing that we did.
Thanks, Tom. And you know, when we share like that, there's things that come up you forgot about. Kind of a comical situation when you talked about that bar you went in, and the second time they had your drink set up for you. When I went back out drinking, 14 or 15 years ago, I got a DUI, and my home group at the time was Eduardo's on 26th Street.
Yeah, familiar with there.
And I left ARD one night, and I went into my home group there, Eduardo's, and the barmaid said, "Dana, you want a double?" And I went, "Jesus, you know, I'm looking around. There are a lot of people there."
Yeah.
And I didn't acknowledge her until I scoped the place out and realized that my probation officer wasn't sitting in there somewhere. Just something that reminded me of that when you brought that up. Thanks
yeah.
again.
Yeah, thank you, Dan.
Anyone else have a question? On Zoom, if you've got a question, just go ahead and unmute yourself. If not, we've got Ike with a question here in the room.
Oh, and you got a gal in the back.
Yeah, good evening. My name's Ike. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ike.
Great day to be sober. Good presentation, Tom.
Thank you, Ike.
You know, maybe you could tell these people what it used to be like when you used to do the steps. They'd give you a big book and tell you to start reading in chapter 5.
Yeah.
That's the only book I know of that they want you to read chapter 5 first before you read chapter 1.
Yeah.
And when you did the steps, I did mine on a little sheet of paper about like that. My sponsor wrote that and said, "Good job." It doesn't work that way nowadays.
No. Thank God things have changed.
Yep.
Hi, Tom. I'm Erin. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
Hi. I have a question. You mentioned that, you know, you're like, there's a lot of stuff that a lot of us, if you're not, you know, the cat, the laser, and the moon, and all that. That was good. I've got all mixed up, but it was still good. There are times where I've been working with someone, and they've done something, and I'm trying to keep my jaw from dropping a little bit, and I don't relate to it. What is your like recommendation when you're like, it's something that I literally I don't know how to relate to them? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, what would you recommend? How do you handle that?
I haven't had that occasion, but I haven't sponsored a lot of people either. I don't know what the reason for that is. I guess, you know, just one of those things. But I would think if I had somebody that dropped a bomb and I was having trouble believing it or thinking, wow, I'd probably call my sponsor and say, you know, what direction should I take with this? But I haven't had that yet, so I've been lucky.
Who else has a question for Tom? Anyone on Zoom? Kevin's got one.
Oh, Kevin, always.
Always.
Hi, I'm Debbie, and I'm an alcoholic.
Oh, here we go. Hello, Debbie.
Yeah. How'd you know whenever you were the life of the party or whatever? That's my question.
How did I know I was the life of the party?
Yeah.
Wow, it only mattered to me. I thought I was the life of the party, you know what I mean? I was drunk enough to make a fool out of myself. Didn't matter what other people thought, you know? Hell, I was passed out in my backyard and the landlord was watering the grass around me one morning. You know, that's how I would roll. I just drank until I couldn't stand up anymore. And you know, I think I've probably been had a few lampshades on my head, maybe a few things like that. But some crazy stories, you know, you hear some crazy stuff. But I never really intended to be the life of the party or thought much about it. Just once I got rolling, I was out of control. And because I never drank sociably, you know, I always drank to get drunk and have a good time. Let's get the party started. So, and by the time it was started, I was passed out in the backyard. So that's I hope that helped you.
Yes, it did.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Anybody else on Zoom? Okay. Thanks, Tom.
You're welcome.
Glad I was able to stick with you as much as I could to get you to do this, because I really enjoy this. You're doing a really great job. Two things as far as the four step goes. When you were doing that last call, okay, and your part in it, was it like an aha thing, like it was a realization, or was it more of a, oh yeah,
I didn't have any ahas.
There wasn't like, oh my God, I didn't know I did that.
Yeah, no, I probably would tell everyone here that I knew I had a big problem with booze long before I got here. So I was pretty much sure when I started my list. I mean, there were some things I probably balked about, you know, saying that, well, I had a part in that, you know, or part of that was me. You know, if you had a boss like that, you'd have acted like me too. You know, but nothing that just came out and hit me right over the head like, holy smoke. You know, I didn't have any of that.
How about any other, did you learn like patterns of things that you became aware of that maybe you weren't quite aware of before?
Well, but the only thing I would say that came out of them was that I learned to recognize when I was getting into one of my situations where I was better than other people or had more than somebody else, you know, when my ego was getting a little carried away. I tended to recognize that sooner and not get carried away with it. And the longer you're sober, the more you realize it, the quicker you recognize stuff. You know, like when I'm in having a resentment or a bad day or something, somebody does something. I was out shoveling my driveway the other day, imagine that. And I'm out by the end and there's some slop in the middle of the road. There's a car's coming, and so I back up. I get like 5 feet away from the end of my driveway, and some clown decides he's going to roll through that slop at about 60 miles an hour and try to splash me, which he did. He did a very nice job, and I lost my temper, and I actually probably went about 20 feet down the street, giving him a nice hand signal and shouting a few obscenities at him, and I don't do that. You know what I mean? But I wanted this guy to turn around because it was 40 years ago and I was going to go a few rounds with that boy. But fortunately, I think he saw how mad I was and he kept going. I'm hoping that he saw how mad I was and kept going. But so things still sneak up on you, but you know, you don't act on them. That one got away from me.
I know when I was doing my four step, it wasn't. I took longer than really needed to be, but I was still dealing with that perfectionism and wanting to do the best four step. You know,
yeah.
That would be, you know, probably passed around AA.
Sure.
I didn't know it was an international organization. If then I would have really, you know, I could have had it printed in other languages.
Yeah,
but you know. When I was doing this, I kind of dragged it out a little bit longer than needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And in that part where I was dragging it out, what happened for me was it affected my attitude. It brought up, I was just churning up all this stuff.
Yeah.
And in that time frame, I was later told that, you know, by my family, by, you know, people I worked with, like, what's going on with you? You know, like,
yeah.
You've got a fuse like yesterday.
Yeah.
So, did you have that same kind of experience while you were doing your four step or in between your fourth and your fifth step?
Well, probably. I don't recall too much of it, but I did have occasion where my sponsor would say to me, he said, one of the things you got to remember is anger does more harm to the vessel in which it is stored than the object on which it is poured. So that made a lot of sense to me. I started thinking, yeah, I'm eating myself up carrying some of this stuff around. So I'm sure I did. I've gotten better about not letting things get to me quite so much.
And when you started doing this program, what kind of support did you have from your family? You know, you had children, you had, you know, your wife.
Yeah, well, my wife was in Al-Anon, which was probably part of me getting here. I think she supported it. She was happy about it. And again, it took a long time for her to start believing that I was going to get involved in AA and really get on the right path. I told her so many other times that I was going to quit. This is it, you know. My parents were very supportive. They knew I had a problem. I'd joined AA, and about 6 weeks after I joined AA, I got a call from my dad, and I said, "Oh, what's up?" And he says, "Well, I'm just wondering how you're doing." I said, "I'm okay." He says, "Did you quit drinking?" And I was like, "You say you don't hurt anybody?" I said, "Well, how the heck did you know that?" He said, "Well, you haven't called me in the middle of the night in 6 weeks." I used to get all bummed out. You know, I was so mad at the world and everything was wrong. And after I'd get so drunk at 2 o'clock in the morning, I'd call my dad and say, "You know, why is it this way? Why, you know?" I could hear my mother in the background telling, "Hang up, hang up on him." But God bless my mom, because I think she prayed me in here. Yeah, she was part of my getting here. So yeah, it's funny how people pick up on the fact that you're not drinking. You don't think anybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody.
How about the kids? How did you get any notes say, "Thanks, Dad, for quit drinking"?
No, I didn't get any notes like that. But I saw a little difference in their attitude, I think, towards me. You know, the fact that they were seeing me home every night and trying to behave myself, they were pretty standoffish too. I think I probably scared them at different times with my anger and, you know, stuff like that. So, but they're good. They're very happy for me now. I've got two of them that need to be here, and they're still happy for me. But they're not doing anything about it. So I could just hope that they do, that they pick up on it.
Thank you for sharing, Tom. My name is Elijah. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
Well, I got two questions. The first time when I first did my fourth step, and thought I was comfortable talking to this individual about, you know, what had happened to me in my fourth step. And another individual was in a meeting, right? It was something that happened to me years ago when I was a kid. And she was actually in the meeting. And what happened was my anonymity was broken. And I ended up, you know, doing some harm. I went to jail. And I felt bad, but then again, I was hurt because my anonymity was broke. I thought it was comfort for me and this individual to, you know, do the step and so I could move on to the fifth step and do what I needed to do. But now, on the second trip, now, when I did the fourth step, this time I got a different sponsor, right? And he didn't break my anonymity. And, you know, we started moving on. But sometimes, like, that kind of triggers me sometimes, because that same situation always come up. So how do I go about, like, just, like, kind of, like, try to remove it, you know, instead of
doing something out of the way?
Well, I, you know, that's a very good question, and I had my anonymity broken, not in the same way. My wife and I went to a wedding, and we're in the food line, and it was a big wedding, and somebody that had seen me in the program at meeting hollers out from here to the back of the room, "Hey, Dewart, you still in that A&A?" I said, "Well, there goes that anonymity stuff." But I forgave him. I don't know. I want to say something, but I don't know if it would be acceptable. If that person that broke your anonymity is still around and it's still bothering you, I think I would be perfectly comfortable telling you to just peacefully, nicely say, "You know, I'm really upset that you did that to me. You know, this is an anonymous program. You broke my anonymity. It's a cardinal rule. You know, that's why people come in here. It's because it's an anonymous program." And let them know it upset you and get it off of your chest. And then maybe by doing that, you know, you'll feel better about it. That's what I would do. I'm always big on when somebody tells me something and I think there's a gray area there, I'll go right to the person or the horse, you know, and I'll ask about it. I don't try to do an end around or try to find out some other way. Just go right to the source. That help you?
Any other questions?
Yeah.
How about on Zoom?
No taker.
No? Okay, well, thank you, Tom.
Okay. Thank you.